Okay, I think I got that problem figured out. Let me give my little spiel again. welcome to the second hour of Transmissions from a Dying Planet. Our guest in the second hour is my old buddy Rob Sterling of Conformist fame. And in light of recent events, I thought it was an opportune time to bring Rob on to discuss a couple of sketchy individuals he's had encounters with over the years by the names of Sean David Morton and the amazingly Randy Randy. Hey, welcome, Rob. How you doing?
That's great. It's a pleasure to be here on your show, and I do hear you well now.
Good deal. So, where to start? Let's jump right into Sean David Morton, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I don't know. Does your audience need some sort of introduction to this guy, you think? Or
that would help.
Let me give a little bit of recent background on him. An article from ABC News by the esteemed journalist Matthew Jaffe. It says, investment psychic accused of financial fraud. Fed says America's prophet, Sean David Morton, built investors out of millions. And basically, the article reads thusly, note to investors, if someone claims to be a prophet and promises to win you money by predicting changes in the stock market, don't walk away, run. And it goes on to talk about how over 100 investors allegedly got built by Mr. Morton. In all, investors gave Morton more than $6 million in the hopes that he would use his alleged psychic abilities to win big money in the market. And when this news story broke, it was about a month and a half ago, it didn't surprise me one bit, because I have another friend, though, 10 years ago or so, got caught in a similar scam that Morton was a point man for, where they were, it was once again one of these new age deals where he's using psychic abilities to predict changes in the stock market. So, and I know you have some past history with Mr. Morton. I thought this was a good time to pile on him and Morton Smackdown.
By the way, a little clarification there. I mean, at least in the one previous case that I know of, it wasn't just a point man. He was basically point zero. That it looks like he was the beginning and ending of this fraud. And, you know, the term that's kind of got bandied about him, which I think is a term that's going to stick, is that he's the New Age Bernie Madoff. So, you know, that's not a good label to put on someone, but it's a pretty accurate one in this guy's case. Because what it appears he was doing is he was, like, siphoning off, like, half the profits of the thing and then investing the rest. So it wasn't just that he was doing bad investments. It was just that he was just siphoning off the money for his own personal pleasure, you know, and running basically a Ponzi scheme. So
yeah. That seems what always happens with, if you watch American Greed, get greedy and start siphoning off the money into other areas, ripping off their investors.
Yeah, and that's the case, at least the one that I know of. There's actually, I'm sure, multiple people. So I think we know one case the same, you may even know other cases, and I've kind of got the hit of other people where that's the case. So this guy, you know, is a serial fraud artist.
Yeah.
But having said that, my first actual encounter with him was, I think, in 1997, when I went to this, in Los Angeles, this Whole Life Expo that they had there. And I remember seeing him very vividly. We didn't really speak, but we were, like, right near each other. I remember that, you know, somehow I kind of vaguely knew who he was even beforehand, and so when I saw him, I kind of knew who he was. But he had, like, sunglasses on inside this thing, and he was trying to make, you got the impression that he was giving off this aura, like he was this really deep, enlightened individual. And you know, my general feeling is, if you're really that deep and enlightened, you don't have to let anyone know. You don't have to, you know, tenure superior to others. So, you know, right away, my con artist scam, the radar was just going off the charts with this guy. And then I actually, this is something a lot of people don't know about, is I used to be friends with a guy named, not that we ever stopped becoming friends, we just haven't really spoken much lately, this photographer named Sean Kinney, who was also in the original Star Trek series. He was the guy before Kirk, who was like the head of the Star Trek Enterprise. And he was the one who was immobilized and couldn't speak.
Oh, that was Commander Pike.
Yeah, Commander Pike. There's actually two Commander Pikes. He was the one that was motionless and couldn't speak.
Yeah.
And then they had another one play him. And so he was an actor of kind of some, you know, notoriousness in a good way, but occasionally going that whole Star Trek convention circuit. Real nice guy. Had a photographer. That's how I got to know him. And apparently he got, because he was really into the whole New Age movement and stuff, and he got to know Sean David Morton, and they kind of became friends. And Sean David Morton had this whole idea to do this documentary on how Hitler actually faked his death and lived in Argentina or Brazil as a priest. And Sean was kind of like interested in it and everything, and was telling me about it. And already, you know, I had this bad impression of that guy, but I figured whatever. Fortunately, actually, for Kenny, for some reason, like, he was talking about it, like, yeah, we're going to do it. Like, and the day before they were going to start working on it, Morton just stopped talking to him, which is kind of, we probably did Sean Kinney a favor, actually, because, you know, probably he would have ended up, if they ended up doing a project, they'd probably be raising money, and Morton would have stolen it all and left Kinney holding the bag. So, you know, by the way, I hope you don't mind me saying this stuff on your show, these speculations, because, you know,
That's exactly why I brought you on, to stir the shit up.
Well, okay, yeah, because, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Morton's a pretty uncredible guy, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to sue, even though what I'm saying is basically the truth.
Hey, let me share a disclaimer, though. The views expressed by our Bob Sterling are not necessarily those shared by your hosts, Adam Gilrightly and Visigoth, or Major League Baseball.
I'm glad you did that. Okay, now I can feel even better to rip away. So, you know, it's just my own speculations and opinions. How I really got to know him, I think it was in... I want to say it was in somewhere in that 98-2000 era. And Ken Thomas, the editor of Steam Shovel Press, a very dear friend of mine, was in town, and I was hanging out with him and Acharya S., a writer best known for the Christ Conspiracy books. And, boy, I hope they don't mind me linking them to this, even though probably good for them anyways, because, you know, it's an interesting story. And
I have been in communication with Acharya recently, because I let her know we were doing this show, and I don't think she'd mind.
Yeah, I don't think she might either. I'll get into that more later on. We decided to meet more, but I think Ken was on his show, in fact. So we actually went to his compound, which is in, what city? It's the same one that's, actually in that video, that I think is on ABC News, where they actually show outside his compound. It's one of those cities, in Southern Cal near LA.
Right.
In any case, we went there, and then, needless to say, maybe some of your viewers aren't aware, but Charlie S. could be argued to be a fairly attractive woman. And I got the feeling that Morton was more than slightly attracted to her. So he invited us all to dinner, and I think a lot of what he was doing is grandstanding and stuff, trying to impress her. You know, that's my general theory. And this was around when there was all this weird stuff about Art Bell. He had quit once, and then there was all this, you know, question marks going on there, and somehow that came up. And Morton, who coincidentally was starting his own talk show at the time, hence why Ken was there, told us what he said was an inside story, that basically he said that Art Bell was a child molester, that that's what this is all about, that there's some documents about that. And he also intimated that his wife, who I think is from Thailand or the Philippines, one of those places, was actually a former prostitute, and that's how he met her. And something about also that he claiming that Art Bell ran a whorehouse, and that's somehow how he met his wife as well. Needless to say, these were very intriguing, you know, allegations, and I thought, yeah, wow, this is it.
Of course, Bell lived in Pahrump, which allows such thing as whorehouses, so I guess the story perhaps could have made a little sense.
Yeah, and it sort of did, because it was almost like he was, you know, connecting some of the dots that weren't there. And to be fair, you know, I'm sure you'll find out that some of his stories, you can see how it could have been misinterpreted. But he definitely was laying it on like he had the whole inside story and everything. And so I just simply said, you know, because I'm a writer, I still have a magazine called The Conformist, found at conformist.com, conformist with a K, cheap, shameless plug there. And I said, you know, do you mind if I report this stuff? You know, I don't... you know, I won't give you necessarily credit if you don't want it, but I do want to report on this story. And he sort of said, well, he did say, yes. I think in some ways he kind of wished he could have said no, but then it would have implied that what he was telling me was a bunch of crap. So it was kind of like, rather than admit he was making stuff up, he kind of said, oh, yeah, sure. So I did a little investigating that night because I was about to, you know, put that whole part of that whole story out, and my gut instinct was telling me that this was not true, that what was being said, though it sounded like the truth, was not. And so I actually sent an email to Art Bell, you know, asking him, hey, have you heard any of these allegations, and do you know anything about this? Well, Art Bell called me up that same day and was very interested in finding out more, and you know, I told him, you know, if you need me to speak to your lawyers or anything, if you want anything in testimony, what I can do, I will. Later on that week, I found out what actually happened with Art Bell is that the child molestation charges were actually about his son, Art Bell, I believe the fourth, who was molested by an adult. And not a Morton, but somebody had read these things and mistakenly, I would believe, assumed that when they saw the name Art Bell in the child molestation case, that it was Art Bell who had done it. Which is, you know, I can understand the mistake, although how it was then disseminated is pretty terrible, especially, you know, before you make some sort of accusation, maybe double check, you know, what's going on. And, you know, the whole thing about his wife being a prostitute, I don't believe that at all. And I didn't even really care about whether he owned a whorehouse or not, since I wouldn't care either way. He denied that. I don't see any reason why he would. He's, you know, got his own meal ticket in talk radio. So, you know, basically, you had a whole bunch of lies and distortions being spread by Morton, who was starting his own, you know, paranormal talk show and was apparently trying to smear a competitor who had done him a lot of favors. And you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I hadn't been cut off. Yeah, so, you know, then I actually spoke to the lawyers. I did not want to reveal my source, and I actually didn't. Although they were able to conclude by me referring to the guy as a pathological liar based in the L.A. area who wanted to get into the, you know, wanted to profit off of Alec Bell's misfortune. Somehow they were able to figure out on their own that that was probably him. And then someone else confirmed that, yes, it was Sean David Morton who was my source. And after they got that, I agreed to it, to admit to it, you know. So in retrospect, I probably shouldn't have even tried to keep silent over Morton after he, you know, I guess the general rule in journalists is if your source lies to you, you owe him nothing. And so, but I didn't, you know, I'm kind of new to that whole journalistic, you know, ball game. Having said that, you know, Art Bell's lawyers did find it out, and Art Bell found out. And strangely, Art Bell never actually seemed to be too bothered once when he found out it was Morton, probably because he knew that Morton was a snake, so he wasn't too shocked.
Well,
and
it really surprised me, because if you listen to Art Bell enough, I've heard him talk a few times that he is someone who, if somebody crosses him, he likes to get even. He, you know, he's a person who believes in the merits of revenge, so it's kind of odd that they were able, he and Morton were able to kiss and make up, and I think Acharya S. was in the middle of that reconciliation, but oddly enough, then after that whole thing between Bell and Morton, Morton ends up a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM over the years with Bell hosting those shows. So
and that's the weird thing. The weird thing is, it seems like Art Bell is more upset at me not wanting to tell him who the source was than Morton for actually trying to spit lies about him, which,
yeah,
you know, that's Art Bell's own little decision. And, you know, the funny thing is, I think Morton actually, when he was confronted by the lawyers, he then started smearing me, alleging that I was some sort of pervert, which I guess is essentially true, but, you know, taking things out of a little bit.
You could neither confirm nor deny that you were a pervert.
whatever. You know, I think it was because, and now I can remember that the dating had to be after, 99. It was probably 99 because I think I had mentioned, that I was at the, Houston 500 gangbang as a covering, you know, in writing, and somehow he took that. I think that he alleged that I was in, participated in gangbangs and other things.
Yeah.
And that's because I heard that the lawyers actually asked him something, you know, about that. And so I guess his response was then to smear me over that, and whatever is all I can say. Although, this leads to another juicy story about Morton, is that I do know a woman who can either confirm or deny who she is later on, who was working on a book about sex at the time, and she was at a she went to actually a swinger club meeting in Los Angeles, and actually Sean David Morton was there, and she actually said that Morton was she did that. I'm not trying to put words in her mouth. She described Morton as being this really repulsive because he was so obviously selfish and just there for his own gratification and screw everyone else. And she actually pointed out she was writing, so she wasn't going to participate. And he got upset because he wanted to have sex with her. And this actually leads to a really funny quote from Morton where he said to her finally, "If you want to watch, go to Disneyland." So, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say the story's the reason I wanted to focus on Sean David Morton with this show, the stories about him are legion. I have other inside information I've received over the years, but probably out of respect to the people he shared it with me, I won't spill the beans, but he's been up to his ears in a lot of nefarious undertakings, to say the least. Story about Art Bell is only an example, as well as this investment scam. Like I mentioned before, in the late 90s, there was a similar investment scam that a good friend of mine got sucked into, and Morton was sort of the point man for it. According to her, he wasn't the lead person who did the swindling, embezzling, but he put people in contact with people, and it was like kind of a new age pyramid scam.
Yeah, and I get the feeling, I know he was raising money for movies, and I think that was one of the things that, like, Sean Kinney was talking with him about the Hitler documentary, about Hitler actually taking his death and living in South America. And I get the feeling he did a bunch of these projects where he raised money for things and never actually delivered on anything and just ripped these people off.
Yeah. And there's some good exposés on Mr. Morton at a site called UFOWatchdog.com.
Yeah.
You're familiar with that?
Yeah, yeah. And basically everything in it is true. That's all I can say. I mean, I believe it.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it's nice to actually have someone ask me some questions about this, because I've known this stuff and I've really kept it to myself, just because it's not something I feel necessarily need to do any writing about. But I've known he's been a con artist for a while, and it's nice that now that it's finally in the public, just release the dirt that I knew on the guy.
Guilty until proven innocent, I guess. any more beating up we need to do on Mr. Morton before we move on to other things?
Well, the only thing I would have to say is I'm kind of surprised that this story hasn't become bigger yet, and it may very well, because, with the whole the whole Goldman Sachs story that's out there, I imagine Wall Street would like to have little distractions from their story and scapegoats. And, like Bernie Madoff, and not to defend Bernie Madoff and what he did, but his is more like the aberration of Wall Street, whereas Wall Street's cons were pretty much, they were all doing it. And that's why Madoff was more interesting, was because, it made it into not the whole culture, but some individual problem. And I wouldn't be surprised if this Sean David Morton story gets more airplay eventually, because, it's a perfect case of a scapegoat from the bigger problem. And in this case, the scapegoat is probably deserving.
Well, yeah. Hopefully we'll see him on American Greed soon. I guess in the grand scheme of things, comparing Morton to Madoff and some of these bigger scams, I mean, it's peanuts. We're talking $6 million
in the
case of Morton here.
But pound for pound, he's a pretty shameless guy. That's the thing. If he was in the shoes of Bernie Madoff or the head of Goldman Sachs, it's frightening what he could have done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt. He's a pretty slick character, snake oil salesman. And some of the claims he's made over the years,
Yeah, I haven't even gone into that with this, just because it's more like, I don't even really bother to listen to him or pay attention, because, I know what he is, put it that way. And I can, all I can tell you is my dealings with the guy, confirmed all my, even my instinctual reaction when I first met him, that this guy is a con artist through and through.
Enough said. Hey, another recent story that came out had to do with James Randi, who came out of the closet at 81 years of age, and a lot of people see Randy also in a negative light. He's, you know, he's a New Age debunker, whereas Morton's a New Age hoaxer, but it, a lot of people have found him disingenuous as well, you know, as far as the mantle he wears of being this skeptic, really a closed-minded skeptic who's not open to, you know, any of the possibilities of there being paranormal phenomena going on, and he's had that famous challenge, I don't know what it is,
$1 million challenge, yeah. Where, you know, I think the other person has to put up money first, and then my understanding is that he has to put all the rules and restrictions in it, and he actually even chooses which ones to go through it as well. And, you know, it's basically a rigged game anyway, so, yeah, I mean, it's, and he doesn't actually have a bond up for his offer, which makes it technically not legal that he's doing it, because if you're going to make some sort of serious offer like that, you need to have the money set aside available for anyone in order to collect it. So that's one of the more interesting side notes in the whole $1 million offer.
Yeah.
But the other thing which I think is interesting is, you know, he's one of these leaders of, what is it called? The Committee for the Scientific Investigation of the Occult and Paranormal, right?
Yeah, PSYCOP.
And PSYCOP, yeah. And it's kind of weird because he is not a a scientist by any means. He's, you know, just a magician. And, you know, that shouldn't qualify him, but when he talks about science, it's not like he has any real credentials in the field. So that's something I've always found a little interesting. And, you know, why is this guy so high up in the PSYCOP, you know, their totem? And it's one of those interesting mysteries. I guess the answer is that he is admittedly a charismatic guy who, you know, definitely gives them some airplay. So maybe that's the answer. But still, he's not someone who... if you want to put up as a spokesman for science, again, he's not Stephen Hawking. He's not Albert Einstein. He's, you know, he's a guy who does magic tricks, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, my interest in James Randi, being skeptical of him, you know, I'd always kind of, I'm a fan of magic, and I gotta say, as a magician, I really always found him to be kind of entertaining. And I think when I was like a teenager, and, you know, I was watching TV one day, it was a, I think like Oprah or something, and he was on, and they were talking about, paranormal things, and I think he had was on with a psychic woman, and this woman, you know, who knows what the truth or false of her was, but he was just relentless, and he was just really rude and dismissive, you know, offensively rude. Like, you know, even if she, you know, it's one thing to say, well, you know what, she's not as, you know, good as her claims may be. She may be sincere, but it doesn't follow science. He wouldn't even go that road. He was like, that this woman is lying, and she knew she was lying, and that she was a complete fraud.
Yeah.
And he was just so rude and nasty about it that finally it was like she just came out of nowhere and she said, well, let's, and I'm paraphrasing, but I remember it pretty well. And she's all, well, let's see, you're a magician, right? And he's all, yes. He's all, so you train other people, right? And she's all, yeah. And he didn't know where she was going. And he goes, and you hang out with little boys, correct? You know, and something like that. And he was just outraged and immediately went to commercial. When they came back, the subject was approached again, but I remembered that, and it was so, so kind of like my instinctual reaction to that was like, this woman was so offended by him that she decided, okay, I'm going to show you how psychic I am, and she tried to find something, you know, which he tried, went to the depths and darkness of his soul and found his real weak link, and that's what he she was doing there. And, I don't know if I'm right or not, but apparently she was able to guess or had knowledge that this guy had a history with teenage boys. And cut to, the late 90s, and I'm talking to some people about Psychop and the curious level of people involved in that with, some dubious credentials. I bring up Randy, and I mentioned that story, and the people start laughing because apparently there was this tape that had been circulating, which I'm sure your listeners know about, or do they know about it? Do you think it's common knowledge among your viewership about James Randi and the tapes?
Well, probably.
Let's hear it,
Rob. Before we get into that, I want to pass it over to Viz for a second.
Oh yeah.
Give out the phone number if anybody wants to call in.
Well, you want me to interrupt this while you're hitting all these heads? All right, yeah.
It's a cliffhanger.
Okay. All right, yeah.
Besides, I can always bash away later.
Oh no, save the best for us. Whatever you do, yeah. All right, now we're a little bit past the bottom of the hour, 36 minutes after, or now 37 minutes after the hour. We want to give out the phone number for all those folks who want to make a comment, which ought to be good, or ask a question of Rob Sterling, our guest today. Rob, we haven't talked too much about this, and before I give out the phone number, why don't you tell us where people can check out where you're at and what you offer? I think you have a website and a blog. Would you give us that at this time?
Absolutely. It's conformist.com. That's conformist with a K for the website, The Conformist, which, started basically in 96 and was one of the first real conspiracy magazines on the Internet, first by email and then by website. And, was really at the peak of the whole conspiracy craze. I would say it's fair to say 0.0 to the whole Internet conspiracy scene. And it's still around. Maybe it's not 0.0 anymore. I give rents.com or prisonplanet.com or one of those, disinfo.com, probably a closer more to the center. But, I think it's still respected for, the place where really conspiracy culture started. And I have my own blog called Robalini, robalini.blogspot.com, and you can see a lot of news stories that I link to, from things from conspiracies to things like the Kentucky Fried Chicken sandwich that has chicken for buns.
Okay. All right. Let me get back the phone number, too. It's area code 724-444-7444. And the ID is 75423 with the pound sign. There's also a prompt after that. Just follow it. And actually, if you're on the website and listening, you should have that information before you. So if you want to make a comment or ask a question, please do so. Adam's got the phones going. And, Rob, I just wanted to mention one thing, okay? You guys were just in passing talking about that whole rat's nest known as Wall Street with Madoff and Goldman Sachs. And if you just indulge me for a second, what I thought was interesting was that my brother-in-law is a Broadway musician and almost jumped into something like that. In fact, exactly that, but something told him to stay away. I think, in a sense, that came under the heading with what Madoff was offering as something too good to be true. But isn't it interesting? See, he did it outside the institutionalization with which Goldman Sachs did it. So I think somewhere along the line he got hung out to dry. When Goldman Sachs does it, they just do some backtracking and, they'll take whatever kind of little hit they get. But you don't screw with the bankers and win in this country. What do you think?
I think you're totally right. In fact, what's so funny, if you don't mind me changing horses that I'm beating now from Randy to Wall Street is, you read the details of this Goldman Sachs thing, and you keep hearing, pretty much everyone did it too, what commentators say. And I even remember 2 years ago, I was even commenting on this one curious case. There was I don't know if how many of your viewers are aware of the Carlyle Group. It's an investment group that, basically had among its investors.
The Bushes.
Both the Bush and the
yep.
Bin Laden families, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and they actually had, in like 2007, I think they started it. It was this the first time in their entire history, and they have a long, respectable history as a private investment firm, that they had a public spinoff of Carlyle, and it was basically a spinoff of housing subprime loans that they were basically doing to the public. And it's really weird. Like, their whole history, they've never done it before, and as far as I know, they haven't done it since, because it turned out, of course, to be an astounding failure. I even sent an article about this recently by someone who talking about it, like saying that it was released at the worst time possible for something like this to happen, which, you know, makes it seem like they made a big mistake. But, you know, 2 years ago, what I was, reporting on, I noted, you know, what it looked like to me was that these guys at Carlyle looked at their balance sheet, saw all these subprime loans, realized it was going to be a loser and could bring down the entire company. So what they did is they basically turned it into their first public investment offering, and that way the public could buy into the Carlyle Group name, thinking, oh, this has got to be a great investment. It turns out it's their worst asset, and that all these people would lose money, and they'd be basically left off the hook, which is pretty much what happened. And, you know, that's basically what happened with Goldman Sachs. So my guess even 2 years ago was it sounded like that's what was going on. And if so, you know, it's basically amounted to fraud and criminal activity.
Sure. Well,
and, you know, so, it, you know, that's just me without even having any inside information observing that news story coming to those conclusions. Now, if the SEC even wanted to look at this, I'm sure it wouldn't be too hard to find criminal activity by Carlyle Group, but it looks like they may just, you know, try to pin it on Goldman Sachs or find a few scapegoats and try to, rather than show that the whole thing was systematic.
If you don't mind, let me add something, because you got me thinking. What I did was I hit a favorite site from an all-talk news radio station in New York. When I was there, I used to listen to WCBS all the time, and now I listen to it online. But with this whole thing going on with Wall Street, I've been watching carefully, because people are being given a shell game right now, and what's going on behind the scenes is extremely interesting and likely to rear its head in another couple of months. But having said that, I want to let you know, the SEC sucks. I mean, not worth anything anyway. But get this, they're going to kick some ass. So here's the headline of the story. SEC chief says regulators examining Lehman Brothers accounting. Great, now that they're dead. But what they're saying is they want to find out. There's a tactic known as Repo 105, which
yeah,
is okay. All right. So here's the deal. Get this. The SEC commission head chairman, Mary Shapiro, is asking whether or not the other 19 largest banks are using that too. Well, you ask them, and you know what? You're probably going to get an honest answer. This is such a joke with this stuff going on. And what you said about Bush and Carlyle, Rob, do you remember when they came out, some Dutch company, some Dutch film crew that came out with a documentary on Carlyle and Bush? And Bush denies it, to the American public. This is Daddy Bush, not Shrub Bush.
Right.
Right. You know, and here they got all the goods on him, and the guy goes around giving speeches out for like $1 million. I mean, I'm not sure about that. But, you know, understand, too, that his grandfather was also indicted on trading with the enemy, along with Averell Harriman, who's a big cog, or was, in New York State. They weren't convicted, obviously. But, I mean, people don't realize when it comes to banking and money, they're the only ones that really win when there's any kind of war whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, more to the point on the father of George H.W. Bush.
Prescott,
yeah. He, basically, the short end is he was the official banker for Hitler and the Nazis in the United States. And, his work as their banker, no small part helped fund the Nazis through the 20s and the early 30s.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Bob, Rob, if you don't mind, what I'd like to do is, you know, we all came about an understanding that things go bump in the night, not because we were born with tinfoil hats or conspiratorial in nature. It's because we kind of paid attention even when things didn't make sense, because that's just the way we were. We asked questions. And that's where what probably brought you to where you are, and myself as well. But one of the things that I'll give you an example for, back in 1976, now I worked for a guy that was 10 years older than I in a college athletic department. So we were all pretty randy guys, and he used to get Penthouse to read the articles. However,
as I did.
Well, you'll understand this though too. Somebody came out with an article, the author's name I've forgotten, but I had the article. But the thing is, he couldn't get it printed anywhere. They were going to take it in Newsweek in time, so guess where he got it out?
Yep.
Excuse that phrase, but he got it into Penthouse. And what I want to do is, I want to send you that because I have it on my late, how should I call it? It's an inactive site, but I can go and get stuff. And the name of it is The Unholy Alliance. I read this in May 76, and these are one of the things that made me stop and go, I never knew about this stuff. And it talks about how GM, DuPont, and Ford helped contribute to a great extent to the soon-to-become Nazi war machine.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, in fact, I don't mean to butt in too much, but especially, and not to downplay the other ones, but I do know that, you know, in the case of Ford and Henry Ford, you could argue that if Henry Ford didn't invest in the Nazis, the party would have died during the 20s.
Yeah, that's it, Ford. You got it. And, well, anyway, you know, don't feel like you're butting in. My God, you're our guest. I should shut up. So what I'll do is I'll throw it back to Adam, but I'm glad you mentioned that, and I would really like to send you that PDF because it just makes for interesting reading at a time a long time, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, you know, and you bring up a very interesting point is the joke of I read only Penthouse only for the articles, or I read only Playboy for the articles, the two most famous. I mean, in particular, yeah, I mean, Penthouse had some really, really gutsy out there journalism when nobody else was doing it. And to a lesser extent, I know Playboy's always been more of an establishment magazine,
right,
but they do kind of dip their fingers into more subversive stuff. And then there's, of course, Hustler, which, you know, doesn't have as many articles as Penthouse, but, you know, definitely Larry Flint is, you know, pretty fearless in radical journalism,
yep,
radical politics.
Yep.
And it's very interesting. And ironically, just, you still there?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I got cut off. There was actually a really good article in Maxim magazine earlier this year about the electronic voting in Ohio, and basically made the very compelling argument that the election of 2004 for Bush was basically hacked in Ohio, and
that's why
Bush won.
Yep.
And I mean, it's amazing it would be in, of all places, Maxim magazine, which we really think more of this frat boy metrosexual kind of empty but entertaining magazine. But it, you know, they had some pretty hard journalism there.
Pretty hard journalism, is that a pun?
There you go. We can't get away from them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Speaking of hard,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, speaking of hard journalism, let's get back to James Randi, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, before we get back to Randi, there's another reason why Larry Flint is so fearless, because he's batshit crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, I was actually watching I think it was CNN today, Elliot Spitzer was on. He's kind of gotten out of recluse hiding, and he was talking you know, I think in some ways when you're either batshit crazy or if you're totally discredited, you know, Elliot Spitzer is somebody to pay attention to now because he has no reason to lie, because it's not like he has any credibility to protect anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he's never going to be respectable again. So, you know, we'll see what happens with John Edwards. I mean, John Edwards was one guy who, you know, I'll be honest, I look at him like, his, you know, I wouldn't marry the guy, but, you know, politically, for the most part, as far as any establishment politician is concerned, he's never lied to me, you know. He may have cheated on his wife, well, more than they have, he did, but I'm not married to him, you know. And be interesting to see what happens with John Edwards in the future, if he will actually start talking about how the divide between the rich and poor, which is really a theme of his political campaigns, and whatever cynicism he has in his own sexual activities, I think politically he was about as sincere as you can get.
Well, if it doesn't work out in politics, he has a pretty face for TV, that's for sure. Hey, we were, so as is the nature of this show, we bouncing around all over the place. Let's get back to the James Randi tapes. And I would assume that most of our listening audience probably doesn't know about these. It's been a number of years since those tapes really people became aware of them. So tell us about the tapes and perhaps about the article, the never-published article you wrote entitled, what was it entitled?
The Amazingly Randi. basically what happened was there were some tapes of Randi that got obtained. It was like his answering machine recordings. And apparently, you know, reading between the lines of what was on the tape, he had put his phone number up in a bathroom stall somewhere in his area, where basically asking teenage boys to have sex with him. And because there are numerous teenage boys were calling him up on this matter. And, you know, when the tapes first revealed, he was trying to say that he was being blackmailed by boys, that he started taping it because all these boys started calling him, which he didn't want. Even though on the tape he keeps saying, you know, I'm never going to meet for, you know, I'm stuck in. And he kept mentioning how he had a 10.5 inch peanut. but now, of course, James Randi's has a history of exaggerative claims, so keep that in mind here. But yeah, it was a tape recording where he's basically trying to talk little boys into have sex with them. And so when I heard about that, I figured, wow, this is an interesting story. You know, especially because he had actually gone after certain opponents of his. There was this guy named Elvin Byrd who was involved in some quasi, I wouldn't say New Age, but parascientific studies. And, you know, this guy actually had, you know, good credentials as a scientist as compared to Randi. But Randi just was relentless on this guy and accused him of being the shopping mall molester, was the charge that he made, which was actually had no basis in reality. And Elden Byrd actually sued Randi and won in court in it, although he didn't get any damages, which is a whole other story in itself. So anyways, I figured, well, here's one of these guys who's long used, you know, slammed people and slandered people and smeared people as enemies. Why don't I write a story on this? And so I mentioned it, and needless to say, there was a lot of reaction from a lot of people. I got a surprising amount of letters from different people in support of my my article. It did spread pretty well at the time, and somehow soon after I got the tapes, and I pretty much know who gave it to me, even though that person didn't tell me that. But I'm able to do the math, and, you know, I'll keep it silent, but there's an interesting story that I'm not going to reveal yet on that. Maybe one day in a couple of years, I will spin the beans on how I got the Randi tapes. But then I got the tapes, got to actually read the transcripts of the tapes, and I wrote this article called The Amazingly Randi, and I also, picked is a picture for Randy, this really creepy looking picture that was supposed to be the top of it. And the headline or the caption below saying, "No little boy, that isn't a magic rabbit in my hat. I'm just happy to see you." And so it was a very, you know, kind of a comedy article but with the whole basis of truth in it. And unfortunately, it was actually sent to Greg Bishop, who I've since outed as a CIA agent. That's another story that we've covered, two of us together.
Yep.
And for his magazine Excluded Middle, and I guess because his funds for the CIA, which were financing that magazine, dried up, he never actually published that magazine. But instead of that, it actually kind of drifted around, and you know, there are people who have read it, and it's kind of got a following. And believe it or not, every couple of months, I get an email from somebody saying, "Hey, do you have a copy of your The Amazingly Randy story?" It's kind of like this obscure version of paranormal porn that's popular on the internet. That if you have it, it has some sort of currency.
Hey, Rob, I wanted to mention our friend Skylar Alfagren expressed some interest in posting that article on our Lo-Fi website. But is it true you actually don't have a copy anymore? And that
Not available, but I think she actually has a copy herself, unless I'm wrong.
Well, I think I'll touch bases with her about that, and maybe we will repost that article for people's possible reading enjoyment at the Lo-Fi site.
You're definitely welcome to finally publish it. I know she was working on an article involving Randy a couple years ago, and I think she got a copy, is my understanding.
Okay.
But I may be wrong on that part. She may have no longer have that article, but like I said, it's got some currency. I wouldn't mind it, rather than being one of the, you know, one of these obscure things with, you know, rather than be a Chinese democracy the people keep waiting for, it actually be out in the public domain now. Since the original thing that was supposed to be published in, it hasn't been, that was like almost 10 years ago, in fact.
Yeah.
And, I was happy, and needless to say, I did get quite a few emails from people gratified that I had finally done a hit piece on Randy that was considered deserving. And, it's fun nonetheless, and definitely if you get a copy or if I get a copy, I will send it to you, and you are welcome to put it on the website. No questions asked.
You are a good man. Hey, we've got to close out here. Give your contact information and websites and all that good stuff again, Rob, before we begin.
Yeah.
On to?
Robalini.blogspot.com. That's Robalini. That's my personal news blog. And then there's the older conformist.com, conformist with a K. Incidentally, one of the more popular articles on there that I regularly get emails about is by a writer by the name of Adam Gorightly, who had a really interesting analysis of the Stanley Kubrick movie Eyes Wide Shut. And then literally every two or three months I get these emails from people going, you know, commenting on it or asking me questions about it. It's one of those things that keeps on giving.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, he is kind of a jerk, that Adam Gorightly, but you know, he is a good writer, nonetheless, so I tolerate his annoying personality. And I also bring that up because I stumbled upon recently on this interesting website that talks about these interesting theories about The Shining, and it kind of reminded me of Go Wrightley's writings on Eyes Wide Shut, the other Kubrick movie that people tend to obsess about. And you know, so I may be doing something on that soon. And
yeah, let's hold it right there, Rob. We'll have you back.
Sorry, bud.
We're about out of time. You'll get cut off here. So, hey, let's do it again, my friend. Biz, do you have any closing comments before we
goodbye.
Say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you, guys.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when.